Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
There is an agenda by the global elite, led by Bill Gates, the World Economic Forum, Big Tech, Big Pharma, the IMF, and others, to create a one-world government. 9/11 was a step in that direction. Under the guise of fighting Islamic terrorism, and they created and trained and funded these terrorists, the elite were able to destroy the oil-rich Middle Eastern countries that would have had the financial ability to resist. The COVID-19 virus is the next step in their plan for one-world government. Did you ever wonder how the elite have been able to get almost every country in the world to respond to the COVID-19 virus in the same way, using strategies that have no scientific proof that they work, like mask wearing and lockdowns and closing small businesses and curfews and telling you how many people you can have over for Thanksgiving dinner and how close you can sit to them? Well, here's how it might be done. Belarus President Alexander Lukashenko said the IMF offered him a $940 million bribe to impose extreme COVID-19 restrictions on his population. He refused the bribe and is now facing a color revolution and is being smeared in the media. Jerry Rice, the director of communication at the IMF, denied this in a press briefing on September 10, 2020. But if you've read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, on how the IMF and World Bank get control over countries, then Belarus's president's bribing statement is more believable than the IMF's denial of it. And if you're not familiar with John Perkins, again, his book is called The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and you can also see him discussing this on video by going to bitshoot.com. And shoot is C-H-U-T-E, so bitshoot.com. And just do a search for John Perkins and Economic Hitman. These draconian responses to the alleged pandemic are being exposed as both useless and sometimes harmful, and are being resisted. The resistance is growing every day. Doctors, scientists, and lawyers are leading the way in this resistance. Doctors who have nothing to gain financially are speaking out all over the world. They've formed a group called World Freedom Alliance and met this month, November 2020, in Stockholm to organize and have also teamed up with a large group of lawyers. The WHO and the CDC are what's called captured agencies. They both have cozy connections and financial support from the Gates Foundation and Big Pharma. And they're making billions off of the alleged pandemic. You can decide who you want to trust, these captured agencies or the independent doctors that you're about to hear. Here's the short speech given by Dr. Heiko Schoening at the outdoor rally in Stockholm on November 17th. Dr. Schoening was arrested when he spoke about this last month in London, but that harassment hasn't stopped him. So here he is, the courageous German doctor Heiko Schoening.
I am very honored to introduce to you medical doctor from Germany, Heiko Schoening.
Attention, attention. The virus of truth reached Stockholm. Well, it's an honor for me to speak today to you, to the Scandinavians, and I'm as a North German, well, I feel my heart just like you. So thank you very much for this year. And I've got a good message for all the uninformed people. As a medical doctor, I can tell you, we do not have a medical pandemic. It's an illusion. If you're not an expert, if you're not a medical doctor, you have your heart, you have your common sense. And ask yourself, they want to give you a vaccination. Normally, a vaccination to develop this will take 5 to 10 years. And Mr. Bill Gates announced he wants to vaccinate 7 billion people, so everybody on this planet. And this should be developed within about 1 year. Where's your common sense? It takes 5 to 10 years. This is not safe. It's not normal. And you need to ask yourself, what is behind this? And you see, it's orchestrated all over the world. It's all over the same. And I can tell you, I'm German. And we were raised up with this question, why all these people in the 1930s do this? Because they were normal people and they had fear. Do you really have fear for a deadly virus? No, perhaps 10% of you. But 90% of you have fear for social distancing and have fear for state measures. All these repressive things that's going on. And we as citizens, we just say, no, we don't want this. And you know this, these masks are worth nothing. The virus is so small, it's like a fly goes through a football goal. Yes, it's like this. And the PCR tests are not valid. And you can't spread it out in a great number all over a community like this, and you have 50% false positive tests. It's just mathematics. And every test has its false positive. It's like a pregnancy test, yeah, for a woman. But when you gave this 1,000 men, yeah, male, you will have 10 positive pregnancy tests. And will they be pregnant? No! And when you do this for whole Sweden, for 10 million people, you will get thousands of them. Yeah? This is just playing with numbers. And it's so simple, the tricks. And you are good educated people here. The trick is just they tell you with the mass media and the government tell you, well, the infection rates are rising up. In fact, it's just a positive test. But this says nothing, because to be infected with a flu-like virus, it means nothing. We don't see the sick people. So, I want to address to all my medical doctors, my colleagues. Tell the truth. The hospitals are empty. We do not see any facts of a threat. No. The media is the virus, not this. And thank you very much, Stockholm. Thank you very much, Scandinavians. We are together.
To hear all of the speeches at this summit in Stockholm, go to the website worlddoctorsalliance.com. And now we're going to hear from a Canadian doctor who spoke out at a recent Edmonton City Council Community and Public Services Committee meeting on November 13th. What makes him interesting is that he's the CEO of a North Carolina company that makes COVID tests. So he's putting people before his own profits. So here he is, Dr. Roger Hodgkinson.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate the opportunity to address you on this very important matter. What I'm going to say is lay language and blunt. It's counter-narrative, and so you don't immediately think I'm a quack. I'm going to briefly outline my credentials so that you can understand where I'm coming from in terms of knowledge base in all of this. I'm a medical specialist in pathology, which includes virology. I trained at Cambridge University in the UK. I'm the ex-president of the pathology section of the Medical Association. I was previously an assistant professor in the Faculty of Medicine doing a lot of teaching. I was the chairman of the Royal College of Physicians of Canada Examination Committee in Pathology in Ottawa. But more to the point, I'm currently the chairman of a biotechnology company in North Carolina selling a COVID-19 test. And you might say I know a little bit about all of this. The bottom line is simply this. There is utterly unfounded public hysteria driven by the media and politicians. It's outrageous. This is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on an unsuspecting public. There is absolutely nothing that can be done to contain this virus, other than protecting older, more vulnerable people. It should be thought of nothing more than a bad flu season. This is not Ebola. It's not SARS. It's politics playing medicine, and that's a very dangerous game. There is no action of any kind needed other than what happened last year when we felt unwell. We stayed home, we took chicken noodle soup, we didn't visit Granny, and we decided when we would return to work. We didn't need anyone to tell us. Masks are utterly useless. There is no evidence base for their effectiveness whatsoever. Paper masks and fabric masks are simply virtue signaling. They're not even worn effectively most of the time. It's utterly ridiculous seeing these unfortunate, uneducated people, I'm not saying that in a pejorative sense, seeing these people walking around like lemmings, obeying without any knowledge base to put the mask on their face. Social distancing is also useless because COVID is spread by aerosols, which travel 30 meters or so before landing. Enclosures have had such terrible unintended consequences. Everywhere should be open tomorrow, as was stated in the Great Barrington Declaration that I circulated prior to this meeting. And a word on testing. I do want to emphasize that I'm in the business of testing for COVID. I do want to emphasize that positive test results do not, underlined in neon, mean a clinical infection. It's simply driving public hysteria, and all testing should stop unless you're presenting to hospital with some respiratory problem. All that should be done is to protect the vulnerable and to give them all, in the nursing homes that are under your control, give them all 3,000 to 5,000 international units of vitamin D every day, which has been shown to radically reduce the likelihood of infection. And I would remind you all that using the province's own statistics, the risk of death under 65 in this province is 1 in 300,000. 1 in 300,000. You've got to get a grip on this. The scale of the response that you're undertaking with no evidence for it is utterly ridiculous given the consequences of acting in a way that you're proposing. All kinds of suicides, business closures, funerals, weddings, etc., etc. It's simply outrageous. It's just another bad flu. And you've got to get your minds around that. Let people make their own decisions. You should be totally out of the business of medicine. You're being led down the garden path by the chief medical officer of health for this province. I'm absolutely outraged that this has reached this level. It should all stop tomorrow. Thank you very much.
And now we're going to be hearing from another doctor slash scientist who was once a vice president at Pfizer. His name is Dr. Mike Yeadon from the UK. You're only going to hear part of his speech due to my 30-minute time constraint. If you want to see the full video, you can go to bitchute.com and do a search for him, Dr. Mike Yeadon. And Yeadon is spelled Y-E-A-D-O-N. In this speech, you'll hear him mention SAGE, which stands for the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies in the UK. And so here he is, Dr. Mike Yeadon.
At this time of year, about 1 in 30 people have a cold caused by one of these coronaviruses. And just like the protection against smallpox provided by previous exposure to cowpox, so people exposed to having had a cold caused by one of these coronaviruses, they're now immune to SARS-CoV-2. So 30% of the population was protected before we start. SAGE said it was zero, and I don't understand how they could possibly have justified that. There's a second and equally fatal, unaccountable error that they have made in their model. The percentage of the population that SAGE asserts have been infected to date by the virus is about 7%. I know that that's what they believe, and you can see it in a document they published in September called Non-Pharmaceutical Interventions, and it says, sadly, more than 90% of the population is still vulnerable. It's unbelievably wrong, and I'm just going to explain why. They've based their number on the percentage of people in the country who have antibodies in their blood, and only the people who became most ill needed to actually develop and release antibodies around their body. So it is certainly true that the people who have lots of antibody were infected, but a very large number of people had milder symptoms, and even more people had none at all. And the best estimates that we can arrive at is that those people either made no antibodies or so low amounts that they will have faded from now.
Recent publication on the percentage of care home residents who have antibodies to the virus. Very, very interesting. This time, they were using high sensitivity tests for antibodies. And they carefully picked out residents that never were PCR positive. These were people who never got infected. And they found that 65% of them had antibodies to the virus. They never got infected. So I believe there was high prevalence of immunity in that population prior to the virus arriving. Big story in the media recently was that the percentage of people with antibodies against the virus in their blood was falling. Now, this was cast as a concern that immunity to SARS-CoV-2 doesn't last very long. Well, you know, anyone with knowledge of immunity would just simply reject that. It's not the way immunity to virus works. That would be T cells. So if the antibodies are falling gradually over time, which they have from spring to present, the only plausible explanation is that the prevalence of the virus in the population is falling, and that's why the antibody production gradually subsides.
Less than 40% of the population are susceptible. Even theoretical epidemiologists would tell you that that's too small a number to support a consolidated and growing outbreak, community immunity, herd immunity. So Sage says that we're not even close, and I'm telling you that the best science by the best scientists in the world, published in the top peer-reviewed journals, says they're wrong, that more than 60% of the population are now immune, and it's simply not possible to have a large and growing pandemic.
Really good news, genuine good news, to hear that there's data emerging from the vaccine clinical trials. And we are seeing vaccines that raise not just antibodies, but they're also producing T cell responses. This is great. Back to proper science, proper immunology. That's how immunity to viruses works. So my surprise, though, and when we're talking about percentage of the population that's still susceptible, we only talk about antibodies, like 7% from Sage. Why are we not talking about the 50% that have got T-cell immunity?
And so you might be thinking, if Dr. Mike Eden is telling you these things, well, how come the pandemic isn't over? Well, this may come as a surprise to you, but I believe fundamentally it is over. The country has experienced almost a complete cycle now of the virus sweeping through the land, and we are at the end of it. London was horribly affected in the spring, and somewhere in early April, they were experiencing several hundred deaths per day from people dying with similar symptoms, you know, respiratory failure and inflammation. And at the moment, the number of people dying of SARS-CoV-2 in the capital is less than 10, so it's down by 98% or something like that. And the reason it's down is because there are now too few people in London susceptible to allow the virus to magnify, to amplify, to get an epidemic. And they would have been hit by now because they were the first place hit in the spring. And I think what we're seeing now in the northeast and the northwest would be the dying embers of the spreading out of this virus. And I'm very sorry that it is still true that a small number of people are catching it, getting ill and dying. So why aren't the media telling us that the pandemic is over? It's not over, because Sage says it's not. So Sage consists of very many scientists from a range of disciplines, mathematicians and clinicians, and there are multiple committees. But I found, to my surprise, and I'm actually going to use the word horror, that in the spring, all the way through the spring and summer, Sage did not have on their committee someone who I would call a card-carrying immunologist, a clinical immunologist. I have to say, I think that in the spring and summer, Sage was deficient in the expertise it had. They should have armed themselves with, around the table, all the people required to understand what was happening, and they didn't do that. People ask me then, well, Mike, if it's fundamentally over, why are we still getting hundreds of deaths a day from SARS-CoV-2? And I've thought a lot about this. There is a test that's performed. People have their noses and tonsils swabbed, and then a test called a PCR test is performed on that, and what they're looking for isn't the virus. You might think it's looking for the virus, but it's not. What they're looking for is a small piece of genetic sequence. It's called RNA. Unfortunately, that bit of RNA will be found in people's tonsils and nose, not if they've just caught the virus and they're about to get ill or they're already ill. It's also going to be found if they were infected previously, weeks or even sometimes a small number of months ago. Let me just explain why that is. If you've been infected and you've fought off the virus, which most people do, you'll have broken, dead bits of virus. These are tiny things, smaller than your cells, perhaps spread all the way through your airway, embedded in bits of mucus, maybe inside an airway lining cell. And so over a period of weeks or months, you bring up cells that contain broken, dead pieces of the virus that you have conquered and killed. However, the PCR test is not able to detect whether the viral RNA has come from a living virus or a dead one, as I've just described. So I think a large proportion of the so-called positives are in fact what I call cold positives. They're correctly identifying that there is some viral RNA in the sample, but it's from a dead virus. It can't hurt them. They're not going to get ill. They can't transmit it to anybody else, so they're not infectious. So that accounts for a large number of the so-called positive cases. These are people who've beaten the virus. Why are we using this test that cannot distinguish between active infection and people who've conquered the virus? This test has never been used in this way, and I've worked in this field. It's not a suitable technique. It's the kind of technique you would use for forensic purposes. If you were trying to do a DNA test to establish whether or not a person was at the scene of a crime, you would not be doing these tests by a windy supermarket car park in what looks like plastic marquee tents on picnic tables. It's not suitable at all, and it definitely shouldn't be done in the way it's being done. It's subject to many mechanical errors, shall we say, handling errors. If this was a test being used for legal purposes, for forensic purposes, like a DNA identity test, the judge would throw out this evidence, would say it's not admissible. It produces positives even when there's no virus there at all. We call that a false positive. As we've increased the number of tests done per day, so we've had to recruit less and less experienced laboratory staff, and now we're using people who've never worked professionally in this area. What that does is it increases the frequency of mistakes, and the effect of this is that the false positive rate rises and rises. So if you had a false positive rate of 1%, which Mr. Matt Hancock told us was roughly the number they had in the summer, then if you tested 1,000 people that had no virus, 10 of them would be positive, astonishingly. If the prevalence of the virus was only 1 in 1,000, that's 0.1%, as the Office of National Statistics told us it was through the summer, then if you use the PCR test, only one of them will be positive, and genuinely so. But if the false positive rate is as low as 1%, you'll also get 10 positives that are false. Some people did say to me, well, there'll be a higher percentage of people coming forward for testing in the communities because they've been instructed only to come if they've got symptoms. But I call BS on that one. I don't think that's true. I know lots of friends and relatives who've been told by an employer, well, you've sat near someone who's tested positive and I don't want you to come back to work until you've got a negative test. I've seen information from many towns in the north, certainly Birmingham was one, Manchester was another, Bolton, where councils, and I really think they were trying to be helpful, were out leafleting the people of their cities, saying, we're going to come round and swab you all because we want to track down this virus. Now, once you start testing people more or less randomly, instead of having symptoms, you get the same amount of virus in the population as the Office of National Statistics found, which is at the time was 1 in 1,000. And I've just told you, Matt Hancock confirmed during the summer, they had a false positive rate of about 1%. So that means out of 1,000 people, 10 would test positive and it would be a false result. And only one would test positive and it was correct. This test is monstrously unsuitable for detecting who has live virus in their airway. It's subject to multiple distortions that are worsening as we get into the winter. As the number of tests done per day increase, the number of errors made by these overworked, not very experienced lab staff increase. I think it's not unreasonable to say a best guess of the false positive rate at the moment, what's called the operational false positive rate, is about 5%. 5% of 300,000 is 15,000 positives. I think some of those positives are real. I don't think it's very many. Now, the problem with this false positive issue, it doesn't just stop at, quotes, cases. It extends to people who are unwell and go to hospital. So people who go to hospital having tested positive, and it could be a false positive, and I think most of them are at the moment, if you go to hospital and you've tested positive previously or you test positive in hospital, you'll be counted now as a COVID admission. Although there are more people in hospital now than a month ago, this is normal for autumn. Regrettably, people catch respiratory viruses and become ill and some will die. I just don't believe it's got anything to do with COVID-19 anymore. There are more people in intensive care beds now than they were a month or so ago. That's entirely normal as we move through late autumn and into the early winter, those beds become used. But there aren't more people than is normal for the time of year, and we're not about to run out of capacity, certainly as a national level. But I think you know where this is going now. If you should now die, you'll be counted as a COVID death. But that's not correct. These are people who might have gone to hospital having had a broken leg, for example, but 3% of them will still test positive, and they haven't got the virus. It's a false positive. And if they die, they'll be called a COVID death, and they are not. They've died of something else. One of the most troubling things I've heard this year was Mr. Johnson telling us about the moonshot. Testing everybody often, maybe every day, is the way out of this problem. But I'm telling you, it's the way to keep us in this problem. That number of tests is orders of magnitude higher than we're already testing now. And the false positive rate, however low it is, will be far too large to accept. It will produce an enormous number of false positives. What we should do is stop mass testing. Not only is it an affront to your liberty, it will not help at all. It will be immensely expensive and it will be a pathology all of its own. We'll be fighting off stupid people, mostly government ministers, I'm sorry to say, who are not numerate and do not understand statistics. If you test 1 million people a day with a test that produces 1% false positives, 10,000 people a day will wrongly be told they've got the virus. If the prevalence of the virus was, say, 0.1%, like the Office of National Statistics said it was in summer, then only a tenth of that number, 1,000, would correctly be identified. But you can't distinguish amongst the 11,000 who have genuinely got the virus and who are false positives. Moonshot, I think, will have a worse false positive rate. It's not fixable. And it's not necessary either. The pandemic, having passed through the population, not only of the UK, but of all of Europe and probably all of the world quite soon, it won't return. Why won't it return? Well, they've got T-cell immunity. We know this. It's been studied by the best cellular immunologists in the world.
And again, you were just listening to Dr. Mike Eden out of the UK, former vice president of Pfizer. And related to the faulty testing, Elon Musk was recently tested 4 times on the same day with the same type of antigen test, and he had 2 positive and 2 negative test results. You can draw your own conclusions about that. And anecdotally, an acquaintance of mine went to get tested here in Connecticut and signed in and waited 5 hours, at which point she went to the desk to complain about the long wait and was told that she had tested positive for COVID, when she had actually never even been tested. I've been reading about other people having the same experience all over the country. Again, you draw your own conclusions. Other examples of resistance to the draconian response to the alleged pandemic are sheriffs in parts of California and New York State are refusing to enforce their governor's mandates, especially around the Thanksgiving holiday. And locally here in Connecticut, there's a demonstration at the state capitol in Hartford on Saturday, November 28th, starting out at noon. And if you want more information about that, you can go to their website. It's ctliberty.org. So ctliberty.org. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.